And we're holding the top of page Lamed Hey in Ksubis, middle of Ois Tesvav. The Mishnah had mentioned the Oina for the expected schedule of Oina, frequency of Oina for people in different kinds of jobs. So the Mishnah had said Piska, so quotation from the Mishnah, Hachamorim Achas Peshabbos, donkey drivers back then were kind of like truck drivers now. They're people who deliver, where they deliver grain and other such things from place to place. So they're out of town for the week, but generally they come home on a weekly basis. Achas b'Shabbos, their expected owner is once a week. Hagamalim, camel drivers, where they go on longer trips, achas l'shloshim yom, then for them it would be once a month, and so forth. Avacholach. So amale rovo, rabba barav chanin labaya. What about if you have a person who has been a donkey driver and now he decides instead he wants to change jobs and go into the camel driving business? So Mai, what would be the din? Can he do that without his wife agreeing to it? Which means that now her oina is going to be only one quarter of the time it was. Amalei, Sabai answers, as the expression goes, Roitza isha b'kav v'tiflus, a woman would rather have a kav, which is a smaller amount, and tiflus, like silliness and like enjoyment, me'asara kavin u'prishus, more than 10 kavim with abstinence. In other words, she would rather have that they won't make, like this, as a camel driver, he stands to make a larger income, but nevertheless, she would prefer the smaller income that will remain a donkey driver and not make as much, but he'll be available to her more often for tash rather than to earn more money with a job that's going to keep him away from home more. So in other words, no, he doesn't have the right to do that unilaterally. The pasuk says, yes, she has a desire for her husband. As we learned yesterday, Tosfos points out, it's one thing, for example, if he's going to be getting a job that's going to be an enormous increase in his income, like we talked about yesterday, the people who worked for David HaMelech, then that's different. That she would go for, but not when it's going to be only a modest increase as you would have from changing from one job to another like this. Tosfos also has the girsa, instead of asara kavin, Tosfos has the girsa 9 kavin. And they explain on the basis of some figures later on in the perek, where it talks about, suppose Taka, you have a husband who's away from home for periods of time, so he arranges with somebody that he'll supply his wife with food while he's away, and he'll reimburse him afterwards. So the Mishnah gives the amounts that he has to supply of food, and it comes out, if you calculate it, then it comes out that she has you have also dinim that it talks about in the perek about murdered and meredes, where he refuses to have tashmish with her, or the other way around, and you have various financial penalties that are involved. So Tosfos makes the calculation that it would come out that she would actually end up with 9 kavim, but nevertheless she'd prefer to have her husband with her, not be out of town, not be murdered, and have only the 1 kav. Eitz Yosef brings from the Aruch another explanation, another calculation that also results in 9 kavim. The point is, in other words, that like this, the girsa that we have in front of us is just like, using 10 as like a random large number, whereas the girsa that Tosfos and the Aruch has is that the number 9 is chosen advisedly to represent one of these two kinds of situations where she would, in fact, get 9, but she would prefer not to have that arrangement. Okay, Piska, then we said another quotation from the Mishnah, Saponim Achas L'Shisha Chadoshim, Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says, and actually that when it says Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, is going on all the numbers in the Mishnah, all the amounts that it says, Tayolim every day, as we learned yesterday, and the donkey drivers once a week, and so forth. All of that is the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, including also the sort of Hasaponim Achas L'Shisha Chadoshim, Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. He says that sailors, their owner would be once every 6 months, because they're away from home on very long voyages, and they're only going to come home a couple of times a year.
What's the parsha that Rashi lists all these?
So Rashi mentions this point in Parshas Vayishlach in connection with the animals that Yaakov gave to Esav. Rashi says the Medrash learns from here these figures. Rashi says, I don't see how actually you can learn these figures directly from the Pesukim, but Rashi just says, we see the idea that depending on the work that a person has to do, then his tashmish frequency is going to be more or less, and we see it similarly with animals, where you have some of the animals that he gave Esav over there are not work animals, whereas others are. And you see that the ratio of males to females is different. Yeah.
Okay, tell that.
Yeah. You're welcome. Okay, so anyway, so the Divrei Rabbi Eliezer goes on the entire Mishnah, including the part that we learned about yesterday, which is that Talmid Chachamim can go away from home to learn Torah for up to 1 month without their wife's permission. And then more than that, we said, then they shouldn't, because their wife might agree to it and really not fully agree to it or whatever, and that would be a problem. So, Amar Rav Adaba Ava, Amar Rav Zu Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. That's what Rabbi Eliezer is saying, that the maximum that he can be away without permission, a Talmid Chacham, would be 1 month. And then we talked about yesterday, we had Rav and Rabbi Yochanan talking about, then does he have to spend 1 month at home in between or 2 months at home? Ava Chachamim Oimnim, but the Chacham disagree with Rabbi Eliezer on that, and they say, HaTalmidim Yotzim LaTalmid Torah Shnayim B'Shalosh Shonim Shaloi B'Rushus. Talmidim can go out to learn Torah even for 2 or 3 years away from home without permission of their wives, and the Chacham hold that's fine, not just 30 days like Rabbi Eliezer says. Omar Rava, however, Rava says, Somchu Rabbanan ad Rav Adaba Ava. The Chachamim in our times are in fact Soymech. They are relying on what Rav Adaba Ava is saying. They are in fact going away for a couple of years to learn Torah. Now, as we learned yesterday, if the wife is Davka insisting that her husband should go and learn, like Rachel did to Rav Akiva, as we'll learn about next time, Be'ez Hashem, then for sure, they didn't let him stay away as long as she's telling him to. But we're talking about where she didn't initiate the idea, where he is. And we're saying that ultimately, if she agrees to more, it might be like she feels sort of coerced into it. So there should be a limit how much she should be away. So Rava is saying, Talmid Chachamim in our times are relying on Rav Adaba Ava, Va'avdi Uvda Ben Afshayhu. They are doing it with themselves, Va'avdi Uvda, and they're doing, however, Ben Afshayhu, it's at the risk of their lives, because, as we're going to have examples now in the Gemara, they end up staying away too long, and that can cause them to be in danger of Min HaShemayim. Ki hadir of Rechumi, as we have the example of Rav Rechumi, have a shchiach kamed Rava b'mechuzah. He would regularly be in front of Rava as a Talmud in Mechuzah. Mechuzah is a city in Bavel. Rava was the Rosh Yeshiva over there, and this Rav Rechumi was a full time Talmud, not full time, but an almost full time Talmud by Rava. Have a ruggle that have a osila basic komala yom de kippuri. He made a habit of his practice would be he would return home only once a year on erev Yom Kippur. One day, it was before Yom Kippur, he was very fatifed in his learning. He's particularly involved in an in-depth analysis of something in Torah. So he forgot to start heading home. Havas Mesachya Dvesu, his wife is standing over there and waiting eagerly, and when is he going to come? And saying to herself, Hashta Osi, he's going to come now, and soon he's going to come. Loy Osi, and he didn't come. It's already Yom Kippur. Cholashtaita, she felt really bad. Achisas dima me'ena, a tear dripped from her eye. Now, what was Rav Chumi doing at the time? As we said, he was in the yeshiva learning Torah, but specifically, Haba Yosef be'igra. He was sitting on the roof learning fatift in something in Torah. If his igra mituse, the roof caved in underneath him, v'noch nafshe, and he passed away. So we see, in other words, because he caused that sour to his wife without even meaning to, therefore it ended up having this terrible effect. So we see, in other words, Rav is saying, even though the Talmid Chachamim in practice do this, they go away for a couple of years, but they got to realize they're risking their lives in doing so.
Question. She's got more pain when he's gone. Oh, what about the Torah that he's learning?
Torah that he's learning, but nevertheless, it can't be on somebody else's cheshbon. In this case, it was on her cheshbon, even though he didn't realize it, but he should have taken the extra step to make sure of that. Yeah.
Second of all, what's he doing on the roof learning?
What's he doing on the roof learning? I don't know. It was a hot day, and he wanted to what?
Getting a
suntan. Yeah. It was a hot day, and it was cooler on the roof. I don't know. Listen, it's not like the Eibishter couldn't have made that something would happen if he was sitting inside either. You know, this is the way it happened. But
if we come home, and something would have happened at home. It's to die, poor lady.
Yeah, so Bachlal, I mean, you can ask the question. I mean, how is she gaining from this? Like, this is even worse off. Her husband's gone completely. So there's a Musav Dikavort on it. There's a Musav Dikavort on it, I think, from Reb Chaim Shmulevitz that says, you see from this, a person harms or hurts somebody else, even though it's almost like an automatic thing, a cause and effect thing. There's going to be a punishment min hashamayim. He didn't mean to. The effect of it is going to be even worse. But it's almost like a derech hateva thing. A person hurts somebody else, then there's going to be consequences, and that's how it was over here.
Why didn't
the Rebbe come to rescue him? I don't know. Maybe Rava had gone home for Yom Kippur. I don't know.
So verbal hurt, right?
Yeah. Pashto say. Unless he asks Michela, yeah. Okay. Another example. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Oina shel Talmid Chachamim emas. How often is the oina of Talmid Chachamim supposed to be? We had in the Mishnah where it talks about different types of people. You have the tayolim who don't need to work hard at all, like we learned yesterday about Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas. You have people who work in town. You have people who work out of town, etc. What about a Talmid Chacham? How often should his oina be? Amud of Yehuda Amud Shmuel, the Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos, every Friday night. And the idea is because first of all, it's Oynig Shabbos, it's part of Oynig Shabbos to have relations. Second of all, also it won't interfere, it won't cut into his learning time. We learned yesterday, Tamar Chachamim stay up late learning Torah, but Friday night they can't do that. There's a Gzeira Derabanan, you're not allowed to read by candlelight on Friday night because you might come to adjust the wick. So therefore, you can't stay up that late Friday night. So therefore, there's time for Oynah then.
Nowadays, it's all electric light anyway.
Fine. So that particular detail doesn't apply, but nevertheless, the concept that there's still owning Shabbos, and there's also Api Kabbalah, you know, we have in Kegavna, we make the whole point over there, but at least, you have Zoh and Malchus connect together on Shabbos. There's many, there's Maimorim in the Siddurim Dach and in many other places that describe, you know, in detail all the Ruchniistic dynamics that take place on Friday night in terms of the reunion of the Eibishter with Knesset Yisrael, Zor with Malchus, and therefore, so it's an appropriate time for a husband and wife to be together as well. So the Gemara brings in this connection. The Pasuk says in Tehillim, "Asher piria yitin be'itoy," that a person who learns Torah, Talmid Chacham, will be like a tree, "Asher piria yitin be'itoy," that will give its fruit in its time. So what does it mean in its time? Omer of Yehuda vi, Tamer of Huna vi, Tamer of Nachman, so of Yehuda or of Huna or of Nah, or some say of Huna, or some say of Nachman says, "Zamash shamash mitosim, Erev Shabbos, Erev Shabbos." This refers to a person who has relations every Erev Shabbos. That is be'itoy, that's the proper time for him, and then asher yitin piria, that he'll give us fruit, meaning that it's the appropriate time for period of Rivia. So again, there's the idea, because of all these considerations, that during the weekday he doesn't have time to, but on Friday night he does, and there's also the Tainug of Shabbos, so that's the appropriate time. No, that's what we're saying, Meloshin Puruvu, yeah, Pri is after all, yeah, it's the same thing, it means to be fruitful, yeah. Okay. The Gemara continues. The Gemara continues. Yehuda breid Reb Chiya chasid Reb Yanai. Yehuda, the son of Reb Chiya, was the son-in-law of Reb Yanai. We learned actually in Yevamos, we learned that Reb Chiya and his wife Yehudis had twins. They had two sets of twins actually. They had two twin boys named Yehuda and Chizkiya, and they had two twin girls named Pazi and Tavi. Chizkiya we actually have in quite a number of places in Shas. Where he was, in particular, he was one of the Rebbeim of Rabbi Yochanan. You have many times in Shas, you have machloikas in between Chizkiya and Rabbi Yochanan, and between Chizkiya sometimes in the other Chachamim. Here we're talking about his brother, Yehuda. So this Yehuda was married to Rabbi Yanai's daughter. Also, v'yosef b'beirav, he was going and sitting in the Beis Medrash, v'chol be'shim shahava osi l'beisi, and every Friday night, b'na shmoshes, he would come home. Now, Beit Shimsha basically just means Bein HaShmoshes. So it can mean Bein HaShmoshes of every night. However, Rashi later on in the Masechta explains that when the Gemara uses Beit Shimsha, generally speaking, it means Friday night. Because other days of the week, you don't really think about Bein HaShmoshes so much because it's not really so important. It's not really so significant. But Friday night, where Bein HaShmoshes is a big difference, you're transitioning from weekdays to Shabbos. So that has great significance. So therefore, people tended to use the word Beit Shimshi to mean the Bein HaShmoshes, namely a Friday night. So here, we're saying that Yehuda would come home every Friday night. V'chayav osi, when he was coming home, have a kochozi kamei amuda denura. There would be a pillar of fire that could be visible coming before in front of him. Marsha says the reason, the symbolism of that was that we find in Shabbos that Rabbi Yosef was discussing with his wife when is the proper time to light candles. She was thinking to light it like right before Shkia, and Rabbi Yosef points out to her, you know, we find by the Amud HaEsh and Amud HaOnan, the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire that accompanied Bnei Yisrael in the desert, where the Pasuk says that the pillar of fire would come before the pillar of cloud left, Mashlim LaAmud HaOnan. So it wouldn't be, in other words, the pillar of cloud left, and only then would the pillar of fire come. There would be a couple of minutes over there when you had both of them. So in the same way, you have to be lighting Shabbos candles a few minutes before Friday is over. So therefore, in token of that, says Marasha, is why a pillar of fire appeared in front of him to symbolize this idea of bringing in Shabbos. And in fact, given that point that Anaf Yosef brings over here from the Hafla here on Ksubas, that says that furthermore, since Rabbi Yosef is making the point over there that you learn from that you're supposed to take in Shabbos a little early, the same way the pillar of fire would come with him. He wouldn't come right as Shabbos is beginning. He would come home a little earlier than that. Therefore, the pillar of fire was in token of that, of him coming home a little bit early before Shabbos. But Bach actually makes a point. Yeah, there's a short siman in Or HaChaim that talks about this concept of Tashmish on Shabbos and that it's the appropriate time for a Talmid Chacham and certain other dinim in that regard. The Bach comments over there in Tur that you see from all of this, it's not just that the oinah needs to take place Friday night, but the husband has to make sure ahead of time on Erev Shabbos to make sure to make up with his wife in case they've been having any quarrels, make sure, do everything that's necessary in order that the oinah should be able to happen that night. So therefore, that's all included in this idea of the pillar of fire, and he says it also represents the outpouring of Kedusha that's coming along with him at a time like this. Anyway, so Yom Echad Meshachti Shmaita, again, one day he was fatifed in his learning, and he didn't come home in time. So then Rabbi Yanai was looking out for the simon. He was looking out for the pillar of fire. When he didn't see it, Rabbi Yanai said to the members of the family, turn over his bed. Now we find in Masech Demoed Cotton and in various places in Shas that one of the things that's done in the house of an oval is to turn over the beds. The beds in those times were made in such a way that you could turn them over and sleep on the underside of it. And nowadays, we don't do Kfiya Samita for a number of reasons, one of them being because our beds are not constructed the same way those were. But in any case, it was one of the Minhogim of Avelus. So Rabbi Yana is telling them, start praving Avelus. Sheomola Yehuda Kaim, if Yehuda were alive, Loy Bitel Oinose, he would never be Mevatel, his owner, which he knows that the Friday night owner is important. Now, Rabbi Yana, so the Gemara says, Havoy Kishgoga Sheyotze Malifnei Shalit. This was like, as the Pasuk has an expression, a mistake that comes from the ruler. Meaning, in other words, in Parshat Pshat, sometimes you might have a ruler, a king or something, says something, and it gets accomplished, even though maybe it was a mistaken statement of his or whatever. In other words, a king has to be very careful with what he says, because people may, actually his servants or whatever, may go and actually carry it out right away. In the same way, the words of a tzaddik, like Rabbi Yanai, have tremendous power, so even though it was sort of inadvertent, he wasn't wishing for his son-in-law to pass away, nevertheless, it had that effect for Noch Nafshe, and Yehuda actually passed away. Marsha brings over here from the Gemara in Moed Cotton, Bris Krusolus Fasayim Bechlal. Even a regular person's words have power. Those are the covenant with a person's lips. What they say happens on some level. We know the famous thing in Hayom Yom, where one guy in Meshvur says to the other one, I would rip you up like a fish. And then the Baal Shem Tov shows his Talmidim how that's actually happening in Shemayim. But here, when you have a tzaddik like Rabbi Yanai, then it happens even more so on the literal level and in the Lamatim Asorat Tfochim in our world. So that means that a person's good speech has a greater effect. That's true. But yeah, the Bach makes a point over here. So I mean, what do you mean? Why does Yehuda deserve to be so severely punished? And he says that's why, because after all, we're talking about here, this is an important thing of Shalom Bayis, and he was considering that not important enough. So therefore, Rabbi Yanai's statement was able to have an effect on him. By the way, the Maharam Shif also points out another a point as well. What makes Rabbi Yanai think that Yehuda has to be dead? It couldn't be sick or something? He says, you know what? We find in Tilim, we find the Pasuk in Tilim, which the Gemara in Sanhedrin darshins, that even when David HaMelech was very, very sick for a while, nevertheless, he was Mekayim Oina. And he actually had 18 wives, so that means he had to be very busy. And nevertheless, he said that he still made sure even during the time when he was sick. So therefore, so the Maharam Shif says, Rabbi Yanai figured the same thing over here. Even if Yehuda is sick, he wouldn't be Mevatel the Oina. The only reason could be, must be because he passed away, and because, again, he didn't mean to say that he should pass away, but nevertheless, his words had that effect.
He
had to be strong, yeah. Okay.
If he had all of them in Friday night, it would be a problem.
Yeah, that's true. It doesn't necessarily mean no. The Gemara actually explains that, and the Rambam brings it lahalacha, that if a man has more than one wife, then the owner is divided up according to the number of them. So say for example, a Talmid Chacham has four wives, then it'll mean the wife number one will have her owner the first Friday night of the month, and wife number two on the second, and so forth. In fact, the Rambam brings from a Gemara in Yevamos that the Chachamim advised, even though technically a commoner was allowed to marry as many wives as he wants. A king is limited to 18. We just had this actually in Daf HaYomi, but a commoner in principle can have as many wives as he wants. Nevertheless, the Chachamim recommended that a man shouldn't have more than four wives, because at least this way they should get an owner once a month. Of course, after Chaim Be'er Ben Gershom, it's all a moot point anyhow. Fine. The Gemara continues, talking about matters of shidduchim, and here we're also going to have the next few stories in the Gemara are all going to be all about Talmid Chachamim going away for a period of time after they got married in order to learn. So the Gemara says, Rebbe I asik le bre be Reb Chiya. Rebbe was going to, we made a shidduch between his son and the daughter of Reb Chiya. Ki motel mechtav ksuba, when it came time to write the ksuba, noch nafsha de revisa, the girl, the kala, passed away, Reb Chiya's daughter. Omer Rebbe chas v'sholem psula ikka. So Rebbe was wondering, is there chas v'sholem a psula? Is there some kind of something wrong with the yichus of the family? Some kind of some mamzeros or something in the family, or some other impediment min hashamayim that we shouldn't that our families shouldn't intermarry? Yisivu v'ainu b'mishpachos. So they went and started delving into the genealogy of Rebbe and Reb Chiya respectively. Eventually, they found out Rebbe osim Shvatya ben Avital. Rebbe was descended from Shvatya ben Avital, who was one of the sons of David HaMelech. The Pesukim in Sefer Shmuel lists David's six eldest sons of Shvatya as the fifth. These were all born when he was still king over Shevet Yehuda and Hebron before he moved to Yerushalayim and became king of all 12 Shvatim. So Rebbe is descended from that family. By the way, there were other places, there's Yerushalmis and other places where it implied, where it says that Hillel's family, and therefore Rebbe's family, because Rebbe is directly descended from Hillel, come from the female line from David, not from the male line. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden says maybe that's what the Gemara means over here. Rebbe's, the female line that Hillel and ultimately Rebbe come from is from Shvatya ben Avital. The father's line may have been from a different Shevet or from a different family or whatever.
What means a female line? David's wife?
Meaning, in other words, that, for example, Hillel's mother would be a direct descendant of Shvatya ben Avital. Meanwhile, his father may have been from a different Shevet. Anyway, Reb Chiya osim Shimi achi David, whereas Reb Chiya was descended from Shimi, really, Shim'ah is his name, whatever, the brother of David. The point being, in other words, that Shvatya ben Avital is from the actual royal line, whereas Shimi, or Shima, as important he is, a brother of David HaMelech, he's still not directly from the royal family. He's only a brother of the royal family. So therefore, Rashi explains, in other words, so it wasn't really a psul, but min hashamayim, and they didn't want that Rebbe, who's from the royal family of David, should be intermarrying with a family with a family that's not from Malchus based David.
So she had to die.
So why she had to die is a different question, but the point is that's why it didn't work out. That's how Rashi... What? So we're saying that Reb Chiya's family was descended from a brother of David, whereas Rebbe was descended from a son of David. Now that's according to Rashi. Marsha points out, listen, I mean, you don't find that the kings of Beis David always married Davka from the royal family. Many of them, the pastors, married wives from outside of it. Marsha explains, They were thinking there might be a psul. When they found out this lineage, then they realized, no, there's no psul in the yichus at all. There's nothing wrong with the yichus on either side. It would have been a good shidduch because of that. There was some other reason, min hashamayim, that the girl passed away, and we don't know what it is, or at least the Gemara doesn't record it for us over here. Well, since that shidduch didn't work out, ozali asikle the brei be Reb Yosi ben Zimra. So instead, Rebbe went to make a shidduch for his son with Reb Yosi ben Zimra's daughter. Now, there's a Gemara in Kiddushin that mentions Reb Yosi ben Zimra was a kohen. If so, then that's a suitable shidduch for Rebbe's son. They arranged, part of the arrangements before the wedding, before he actually marries her, was that he's going to spend 12 years learning in the yeshiva. In other words, remember, you know, this is back in the time when they did Kiddushin and Nisuin separately. So the deal was that he would do Kiddushin, then they would go away to learn in the yeshiva for 12 years, and then he would come back and do the Nisuin, and they would settle down to family life.
12 years.
How long was Rabbi Akiva away?
Rabbi Akiva was 24 years. We'll learn about that next time, Bez Hashem. But yeah, it was 12, and then she said, go away for another 12. Yeah, we'll learn about that next time, Bez Hashem. But yeah, Taka, why in a number of these stories do we find 12 years? So Marsha says like this, you know, we have Ben Shmona Esther Lechopa, right? A chosin is supposed to get married when he's 18. Then you have Ben Shloshim Lekoyach. When a man is 30 years old, then he's got his full strength. Then, in other words, he can be working for a living. So the idea is, in other words, after the age of Ben Shmona Esther Lechopa, after that, he should be spending the next 12 years learning Torah until he's 30, until he has his full koyach, and then he can come home and start his family. That's according to Marsha. Iyun Yaakov gives a different reason having to do with basically 3 years learning each of four areas in Torah. And there's several other explanations, including the Chidah. The Chidah on the Gemara over here brings a half a dozen reasons why they would do 12 years. One interesting one, he says, if you calculate 12 years, comes to a little over 613 weeks. You calculate it, it comes out to like 620 some weeks. So therefore, what it would be is during the 12 years, each week, they would be focusing on and fatifing zich in the details of one of the 613 mitzvahs. So that would be, so therefore they spent 12 years doing that. So that was the arrangement. Again, he's going to wait 12 years until he actually completes the marriage. Achlefur kameh, then they had the kala walk in front of the chosin. Omalahu, he says to them, you know what? I can't wait that long. Nehavu shishnin. Let it be only 6 years that I'm going to go away. Achlefur kameh tinyan. Again, they had her walk in front of him. Omalahu, he says, you know what? I can't even wait that long. Ichnis v'hodu izil. Let me first marry her and do the nisuin, and then do the chuppah and the nisuin and all that. And then after that, I'll go away to the Beis Medrash.
Is that where
I
get the halacha from, not to walk behind the woman?
Well, maybe, I don't know. Habakam machzif mavua. So now the son of Rebbe is kind of embarrassed of his father. What am I acting like a bal taiva over here that I have to first marry and fulfill my taivas before I go to learn? But Rebbe tells him, Bni das koincha yeshbo. You should know you have to a certain degree the das of the Eidishter in you. He also felt the same way, so to speak, and then changed his mind, Kavyochel, about how he's going to do as far as the marriage with the Jewish people. Me'ikraksiv, because originally by doing Oz Yoshir, you have the pasuk to be emo v'sita emo. Moshe and the Jewish people sing over there, you will bring them to Eretz Yisrael and you will plant them over there, Baha'u Nachaloscha, and you have the pasuk over there mentions further on about the Beis Hamikdash, Mochem L'shiv T'chop Ha'al T'Hashem. In other words, so to speak, the original plan of Hashem was first they're going to come into Eretz Yisrael and then they're first going to build a place for the Shechina on earth. All of a soif ksiv, then afterwards Hashem says, V'osuli mikdash shechanti b'soicham, even while they're in the desert, make for me a mikdash and I'll dwell among them. So in other words, it's almost like Hashem, so to speak, is saying, I can't wait that long. I'm too much in love with the Jewish people. After Matan Torah, we need to hurry things up and we need to build our marital house first. And just like this son is saying, I can't wait 12 years to marry my kala. Now, what does it mean? Marashah says Hashem doesn't change his mind. Fine. I mean, you have the Medrash says that the Mishkan was to be mechaper for the Aveira of the Eagle. In that case, Marashah says that it doesn't necessarily really fit over here. We could say Hashem changed the plan because of the Chet Eagle. But nevertheless, we see, in other words, that there is this idea that things were moved up. There is a different interesting explanation that the vote was. Originally, Hashem's plan. Why was Hashem's plan originally to wait until they come into Eretz Yisrael to build the Mishkan? Because then they'll be on a higher ruchniistic level. But in the end, Hashem says, "You know what? Let's not wait that long. Right now, we see already they're falling through in the midbar. Then they need to have the Mishkan right away." So, in a similar vein, what we're saying over here is: first, the son of Rebbe thought that he could handle the 12 years. Afterwards, he's realizing, "You know what? Better. I need to marry her right away." And Rebbe is saying, "You know what? In a way, it's better that way. That way, you'll learn Torah." Tahara. Like this, you're going to have for 12 years, you're going to have Hirhurim. So like this, in other words, if you actually marry her and you have your first relations with her, then afterwards that helps that now you'll be able to learn Torah with a Torah dick of mine. So sure enough, they did that. Ozel Yosef Tarki Streshinin Mebei Rav. So he went and learned for 12 years in the yeshiva. Ad Osi, by the time he came back, I Akra Devesu, his wife had become sterile. Now the Gemara means that she was unable to have children. Now, what happens is, Rashi explains that the Gemara in Yevamos tells us that if a woman, after having been married, after having had relations, stays 10 years without a husband, then often she'll become infertile from that. So now that it was already 12 years. Now, Marsha points out that really the Gemara explains over there, that's only when she's Masiyah Das, when like she's given up hope of ever getting married again. Here she's obviously not giving up hope. She expects her husband to be back after 12 years. Nevertheless, though, there is the idea. Since Eitz Yosef points out precisely that, since she didn't expect him back for 12 years, then therefore there's a certain Masiyah Das. So it had that effect on her. He also brings from that flaw further. He says that another way of looking at it is that it should have been Rebbe held like Rebbe Eliezer. We said before Rebbe Eliezer holds the maximum a Talmid Chacham can be away from his wife without her giving the idea first is 30 days. Here instead he's away for several years. So you have 10 years, which is enough to make her infertile, plus another 2 or 3. And here we're saying altogether he was away for 12 years. So by the time now she's not going to be able to have children.
10 years connected to the halakha about if you're a married woman and you and your wife. No kids in 10 years, you're supposed to divorce.
It may be related, but I don't know. I mean, both of them are 10 years. I don't know if there's a direct connection.
No, they're not until 40 years old.
What?
She did for 10 years. Nothing happened. She didn't have kids.
So often the Gemara says in Yevamos that yes, if a woman has previously been married, previously had relations, and then for 10 years she's without a husband, and as the Gemara says over there, without any plans to get married or to get remarried. Yeah, right. So Maharsha mentions that point, and he says that you can't say she was Masiach Das, she is expecting her husband. But on the other hand, Eitz Yosef and Anaf Yosef point out, the fact is, she knew her husband's not coming back for all those years, so in a way she was Masiach Das. Okay, so now she's infertile. Omer Rebbe, so Rebbe says, Hei Chineved, what should we do now? Nigrasha, should he divorce her? Shamra? Are we going to have to say that this poor woman waited for nothing? It's not right. She waited all these years. Ninsava Itzachriti, should we have him marry a second wife? It's before Chaim De'Abershim, you're allowed to. But Yoimru, Zois Ishtev, Zois Zoynasai. People are going to think then that only the one is his primary wife and the other one is just like a Zoyna. In other words, it's one thing. In other words, for example, if you had children with her and then later on he marries a second one or whatever, it was one thing. But here, where she's infertile, people are going to think that is he has a main wife to have children, and then he has another one, al derech, like you have with Lemech in the dirt on Mabul over there, where it says they would have one wife for children and one wife for beauty. So either way, it's not going to work. So Rebbe davened on her behalf, and she was cured, and she was able to have children after all. I forgot to mention, by the way, in connection with what we said before about the Oina being Friday night, the Bach makes another interesting point over there in his comments on the tour. He says you have the words in the Pasuk, V'shomru bnei Yisrael es HaShabbos. He says the shomru can mean to wait for something, to wait and delay something, like V'shomru es HaDavar, and bnei Yaakov es HaShabbos is Rosh HaTevis Bia. So that hints to the Talmud Chacham who wait for Friday night to have relations with their wives. Yeah. The Gemara continues, another example of a Talmud Chacham who went away for 12 years. Rav Chananya ben Chachinai have a ka'ozol lebei Rav. Rav Chananya ben Chachinai was going away to the yeshiva. B'shilhei hilulei d'Rav Shimon ben Yochai. At the end of the wedding of Rav Shimon ben Yochai. So Rav Shimon ben Yochai had just gotten married. It was almost the end of the Sheva Brachas. And Rav Chananya is ready to go. Omalei, so Rav Shimon says to him, wait for me until I can come with you and we'll travel together. Wait till my Sheva Brachas is over, we'll go together. Rav Chananya did not want to wait. He went right away. And one thing you can learn from that, by the way, is when you have a motivation, sometimes you're fired up to do a mitzvah and you're really motivated to do it, don't wait. Because then the motivation may dissipate and you don't end up doing it after all. So here, Rav Chananya is all fired up with, I'm going to go to the yeshiva. Then he knows there's no waiting for somebody to accompany him.
What were the words for
B'yat for Rosh Hashanah? B'nei Yisrael HaShabbos. Yeah. So, Ozo Yosef Tartis Shreit. So Lo Yaakov Lo, so he didn't wait and he went by himself. Ozo Yosef Tartis Shreit Shinin. B'bei Rav, he went to Rav Chananya and learned for 12 years in the Beis Medrash. Ad Osi, by the time he came back to town, the paths in the town have changed. Over 12 years, you know, buildings have been built and knocked down, streets have been rerouted or whatever, and he didn't know, he didn't recognize the way. The Medrash in Vayikra Rabba tells the story over here also, and it mentions also the house itself had changed over the years, like the entrance to the house is not even in the same place it was before. So V'lo Yodol, Mezel Beisi, he doesn't know how to get home. Also Yosef, and the Medrash also adds an interesting detail. At the end of the 12 years, there was also his wife had sent him a message, your daughter is ready for Shidduchim. So he realizes he has to come home anyway, and Rabbi Akiva has Ruach HaKodesh and knows that that's going on, and he tells him, he announces in the Beis Medrash, anybody who has to go home to arrange Shidduchim for their children should leave. So Rabbi Chananya had left, yeah. So he comes over there, and he doesn't know where to go to his house or how he's going to do anything. Ozo Yosef Aguda de Nahara. So he went and sat by the riverbank. He overheard a certain girl to have a korala. People were the other women, the other girls were calling to her. Bas Chachinai, daughter of Chachinai, Molly Kulsech, fill up your jug with water, v'ton nezel, and come, let's go. So they called her Bas Chachinai. Omer, he realized, Shmaminahai Revisa Didan, that must be my daughter. So Ozel Bastra, so he followed her to the house. Hava Yisiva Dvesu, his wife was sitting in the house. Koniela Kimcha, she was sifting flour. Dal Ena, she picked up her eyes, Chazise, and she saw him, her husband, all of a sudden, as a shock for the first time in 12 years. Savi Liba, her heart saw, in other words, she, like, all of a sudden, like, she realized, this is my husband. Horach Rucha, and her neshama fled from her, she passed away. Amalafanav, Rav Hananiah says, Rebbeinu Shalom, Aniya Zuzu Schara, this poor woman, should this be her reward, that after waiting for me loyally for 12 years, now she's going to pass away like that? Barachmi, Allah v'choysa, he davened for Rachmanus for her, and she was brought back to life. The Medrash, by the way, when it tells the story, adds another detail as well. Rav Hananiah didn't even knock on the door before he came in. He figured it's his house, he can walk in. But that's also what startled his wife and caused this. We learn from this, says the Medrash, even you're going into your own house, knock first, announce yourself.
One thing. What has to do with the beginning of the story that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai told him to wait for him?
The point is that maybe if Rabbi Hananiah had gone together with Rabbi Shimon, then the idea is that maybe he would have made, maybe they would have kept in touch over the years with what's going on in the house, and he wouldn't have been so unfamiliar with what's going on at home. But
what has to do with the story?
L'chore, it's just the Gemara wants to mention. It's just mentioning the whole story for us. The Pashtos, the Gemara is just mentioning all the details of the story. I don't know why.
Interesting, saying something and then.
I mean, the point may be that Rav Hananiah was in such a hurry to go that, like, he didn't make sure to take care of finding out things before he goes, and to make sure of to know of what's going to be going on when he eventually. An interesting nafkamina of halacha, by the way, in this poskim achronim discussed the question. Now, if she passed away and then she came back to life, well, when a person passes away, then that's it. Their marriage with their spouse is over. Get to Mrs. Abal. Now, would we say he has to be Makadishur again? And the answer is no. We don't find from the Gemara that he had to. So it means, in other words, even though she died in between, nevertheless, that doesn't interrupt their marriage. And when she comes back to life, it's considered like she had never died. This has nafkaminas in halacha. Among others, the Tzitz Eliezer actually points out, as a matter of halacha, for example, a person has open heart surgery and their heart needs to be stopped for a while. You don't say. They need to be Makadosh their wife again after the surgery is over. Even though it's a short time later, maybe sometime later, but the point is it doesn't interrupt things. There's also a sicha in that connection also that Eber talks about. There's a Gemara in Nida where the people of Alexandria asked Rabbi Yeshua a bunch of questions. Among one of the questions was with the Ben Ha'isha Shunamis, the boy that Elisha revived, was he matame or not? And Rabbi Yeshua says, no, he's not matame, because only a dead person is matame, not a live person. So Eber has a very detailed analysis in a sicha there in Chedek Yud Tes, I think, where one point is related to this, is that when a person has died and then comes back alive, it's not considered that there's an interruption of their life. It's rather their continued life after that is a continuation of what came before, rather than a new metzius. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gu'ula, Tes Tevis. So the Rebbe was talking about in early Tufshin Nun Beis, every person knows for themselves where they stand in Avoda. And everybody knows there are things by them that need to be fixed up. Nevertheless, that doesn't chas v'shalom contradict what the Friedrich Rebbe and our Rebbe said, that the entire Avoda is completed and we're all standing ready to greet Mashiach Tzidkenu, because the avodah of the Jewish people collectively is done. Any individual person still has what to work on themselves, but the avodah of the Jewish people collectively has already been completed and finished. So there's no reason, there's no explanation, and no logical understanding why the Geula has been delayed. And if the Rebbe was saying that in Tufshin Nun Beis, what can we say now, a third of a century later? Yeah.
3 years later.
Yep. Continuing on halachas of things you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. Now the pasuk we talked about, the pasuk says mimtzoich chepzecha, you're not allowed to go and look after your affairs on Shabbos. And from that we said, for example, that you're not allowed to go look at your nechosim and make plans for after Shabbos, and to go walk to the edge of the tchum, as we talked about all that yesterday. So now the pasuk continues v'daber dover, you're also not allowed to speak words. From that, the Chachamim learn that it means that the way you speak on Shabbos should not be like the way you speak on weekdays. So, for example, you can't say, I'm going to do such and such tomorrow, or I'm going to buy such and such tomorrow. Again, that would apply, similar to the Mamsei Heftecha, only things that you can't do today without there being Chilul Shabbos involved. If there's some possible way of doing it on Shabbos, then even though right now that circumstance doesn't exist, then that would be example. So for example, let's say you could say, I'm going to go someplace tomorrow. Conceivably, you could go there if it's within the Tchum, or even if it's not, even if it's outside the Tchum, for example, if there are buildings along the way, then you could walk there. Consider, for example, hypothetically, you could walk, let's say, all the way from here, probably to Washington, D.C., and still be within a Tchum, because there are enough buildings along the roads. But on the other hand, you can't say, for example, that I'm going to drive there after Shabbos, because driving, of course, you can't do on Shabbos. Even talking Dvorim B'Telim, you shouldn't really be doing very much of on Shabbos. So you're also not allowed to tell over on Shabbos things that would cause tsar, things that are going to cause discomfort or pain to other people. Another example is you're not allowed to mention calculations on Shabbos. So it can be things that you're going to yet do. I'm going to spend X amount on this kind of thing, or things that you did before, and you still need to figure out. Let's say, for example, you might say, for example, I hired contractors to do this and this job, and I've already paid them X amount, and I have yet to pay them X amount. So that kind of those kinds of calculations you can't do on Shabbos. But if it's a cheshbon that you don't really need, then you would be allowed to calculate. So let's say, for example, you might talk about in the past, I did this project 5 years ago and I spent X amount on it. Fine. I mean, that's not negeya right now, unless, of course, you're talking to somebody else who wants to know how much you spent to know for his own things, and that would be a different matter. So that would be that kind of thing is allowed, but still, you're not supposed to be talking sicha b'tela on Shabbos. So you can talk about it briefly, but you shouldn't be spending a lot of time on it either, because Shabbos is meant for talk about Torah and ruchnistika things and whatever. The Altareb actually talks about on the last page of Tanya about that concept, that Shabbos has a pnimius and a chitzonius, and the pnimius is to the chitzonius is to rest from malacha, and the pnimius is to rest from words, from dvorim b'telim, and things like that. Yeah.